This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, survivalists. This is the Crux True Survival Stories, and I'm your host, Casey McIntosh. I'm joined here today by Jilly Henningsen. How are you doing today, Jilly?
Good, Casey. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. In the heart of a brutal winter storm amidst the relentless fury of the Atlantic Ocean, U.S. Coast Guard rescue swimmer Michael Odom finds himself in a dire predicament. Exhausted and alone, dropped from a helicopter into tumultuous waters 350 miles east of Savannah, Georgia, he confronts the chilling reality that his life hangs in the balance. Struggling to save three lives amidst towering waves and fierce winds, Odom fights against the elements with all of his strength. Yet as he battles exhaustion and the relentless assault of the sea, he knows deep down that his own survival is uncertain. So, Jilly, get ready for this one. It's full of thrills and unnerving excitement, and it will make your hair stand a little bit on end. And my brother, Coley, who I've talked about before, he's a Delta pilot. He told me about this one. Apparently, he rode in a shuttle with someone who happens to be friends with our main character, and that's how I came to find the story.
Oh, I love that.
Right? He sent me a text message that just said, Mike Odom. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, just look it up. Coast Guard, Mike Odom. So that's where this story hails from.
That's amazing. And there's a connection, like 4 degrees of separation, which is even cooler.
It's so cool. And he was telling me, oh, and this guy was saying all these other stories. And da-da. And I was like, did you get this person's name? Like, we need to know who this person is.
If you're listening, reach out, send us your stories.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he will be listening because, you know, I'm sure that my brother told him about this because he was obviously really into the whole concept, just telling random people that he doesn't know the stories. For this one, we're going back to January 23rd, 1995. So aboard Coast Guard helicopter 6019, Michael Odom is meticulously checking off his rescue checklist in preparation for the retrieval of survivors from sailboat Mirage. Lieutenant Matt Reed is piloting a circling Coast Guard HC-130H Hercules, and Lieutenant Jay Beta is piloting the HH-60J Jayhawk twin-turbine helicopter, briefed the sailors via radio. Odom readied himself for his role. His plan was to be in the water, catch each sailor after they jump ship. However, moments before the five sailors were to take the plunge, the captain of the sailboat made an unexpected radio announcement. He was refusing to abandon ship, which we're going to get into details of that later.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. So it sounds like there's two Coast Guard rescue helicopters en route or are on scene to help a sinking ship. And at the last minute, the captain decides he doesn't want help.
Exactly. So actually, the Hercules is a fixed wing aircraft.
Oh, okay.
So it's the Hercules and the Jayhawk for anyone who doesn't know plane numbers and letters like I don't.
Nor I.
It's meaningless to me. But the Hercules is a fixed wing. And then we have the Jayhawk, which is a helo, or which is different than a helicopter, but similar. So the helo is there to rescue the men. And I didn't know this, but it's mandatory that if it's nighttime and it's dark, that you have a fixed wing always with a helicopter during a rescue.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So the Mirage, the sailboat, had been battling an intense storm. It had been going on for 3 days, and it just kept getting worse. Okay. So the Mirage was a 40-foot racing sailboat, and it was on its third day. It was coming from St. Augustine, Florida, and they were headed to the Virgin Islands. But unfortunately, a strong winter front came from the Atlantic coast. And these sailors had little experience with this type of storm on the ocean. disaster was striking left and right. On the second day, they experienced engine failure. None of the batteries were charging. They were running out of their food supply. One of the crew members, Mark Cole, was hoping that the storm would pass quickly, but it just continued to gain steam. And the autopilot, which was electric, was not working as the result of some corrosion to the electrical system of the boat, potentially due to faulty maintenance. So the crew members, as a result of the autopilot being on the fritz, were having to take shifts at the helm for 2 hours at a time. But they were all becoming absolutely exhausted because they're being thrown around in these giant waves. I'm sure just standing there for that period of time is going to be challenging. So they were all taking turns resting in the cabin. And the captain of the vessel, Alan Brugger, took command of the vessel and navigated for about 3 hours as the rest of the crew was attempting to rest down below. But rest was nearly impossible just because of the winds, which at that point were 50 knots. The storm was just a savage.
Yeah, can you imagine trying to get a little nap in when you're just getting probably tossed back and forth?
Well, and especially after something's been going on for this long of a period of time, I would imagine that your adrenaline is just sky high.
Right. There's no sleep happening there. Yeah.
No. I mean, there might be a lot of peeing your pants, but probably not a lot of sleeping.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you don't think that it's going to get any worse, especially in our stories, it usually gets worse.
Oh, it gets
worse. Is what happened here.
There's more.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Gets harder and then a little more hard. Cole, that I mentioned earlier, said, quote, "It just started picking up and picking up and picking up, and the waves kept getting bigger and the skies darker and the skies darker." Down in the cabin, the noise was just incredible, and you can't imagine being on a boat and having these kinds of sounds. After this initial front passed, the wind abruptly changed direction from the southwestern direction to the west-northwest. And a tumultuous clash of waves erupted. So you have basically waves coming from two different directions and coalescing.
Oh, like you're in a washing machine, basically.
Yes. And this wave that reached a staggering 50 feet in height crashed over the top of this small fiberglass hull and just completely submerged it underneath a torrent of churning water. And reeling from the force of the wave, the boat rolled 120 degrees before the hull resurfaced. So it, you know, almost halfway.
Yeah, almost completely upside down. Oh, wow. I guess that's how those boats are designed to respond, though. That's incredible that it just popped back up.
Right. It finally resurfaced amidst this torrent of frothy white caps. It was stripped bare of all that had been secured to the deck. And below the deck, Cole, who was attempting to rest, was violently thrown across the cabin by an onslaught of water. Mm. The cabin was inundated with 2 to 3 feet of seawater, and the electrical system was shorting out from seawater exposure. Cole rushed to the cockpit. He was expecting to find it unmanned. He thought that those men had been washed right off of the boat.
Yeah, it's incredible if they haven't. And then the other thought is, if he did pee his pants, now he's soaking wet, so it doesn't even matter.
It doesn't make any difference.
No difference.
Well, actually, the only difference is that the ocean water is much colder than his urine.
That's true. He's a little colder.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting. So Brugger is the captain. He's still at the helm. And all I can picture when I think about this, do you remember Caddyshack? I was thinking of the movie Caddyshack when I was thinking of this captain, because I was picturing the guy that's out on the golf course and it's just raining and lightning, and he's like out there laughing, like, bring it on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I'm kind of picturing this captain. He was like, I'm not going to be deterred.
Or like, you know what that reminds me of is Captain Dan in Forrest Gump, in the scene where he's out in the crow's nest on the mast of his ship. Bring it on. Is that the best we've got?
Yes, totally. That maybe that's what I was thinking of. But I was also thinking about the golfer, which is obviously less of a significant situation unless you get struck by lightning.
Sure, then it's more.
But in any case, Fred Nielsen, who was one of Brugger's friends, he was up there during this wave that came and crashed down on the boat. And he actually got thrown overboard, but he had a safety harness on. He was still hooked to the boat. So Cole and Brugger were able to frantically rescue Nielsen from the turbulent waters. And at that point, in terror, they watch their life raft vanish overboard into the darkness.
Oh, no. That's horrible.
So, yeah, I can imagine that would be almost like, it probably would feel like a death sentence, really.
Right, yeah.
After what you just experienced.
Right. You'd feel like all hope is lost.
Exactly. Around 8 p.m., under the pressure to survive with this intense situation that's upon these men, crew member Dave Denman, who was a private pilot, he managed to operate the SSB HF radio. He contacted the Coast Guard. And by 8:30 p.m., Coast Guard radio stationed at Hampton Roads in Cape May intercepted a distress call from the Mirage, triggering a response from Coast Guard units spanning from Miami to Norfolk. However, amidst the seemingly sinking vessel and the loss of their life raft, the crew had doubts about their survival. So at this point, they're thinking that the vessel maybe has a leak. Obviously, there was a lot of water that came into the boat during that giant wave, but I think that they might have some fear about a leak on board or something.
Mm-hmm.
3 hours later, which is quite a long time if you're waiting for rescue, a glimmer of hope emerged with the arrival of the Hercules, of the HC-130H aircraft from the Coast Guard Air Station, Elizabeth City, North Carolina. So Lieutenant Reed was flying this, the Hercules, which is the fixed wing, and he was leading Lieutenant Beta of the Jayhawk, and they arrived on the scene over the Mirage at 1:10 a.m.
Oh, so it's pitch black, middle of the night, middle
right.
of a storm.
I think that the nighttime just is going to intensify any anxiety that you might have about the situation.
Yeah.
Like, let's make it dark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And cold.
So like I mentioned, fixed wing aircrafts are required by station policy when helicopters go off beyond 50 miles. Oh, so it's distance related. If they venture beyond 50 miles offshore at night, that's when they need the fixed wing.
Gotcha. And these guys are 350 miles offshore?
Correct.
Yeah, that's a way.
And they're watching the boat below being stirred up by the storm.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Fuel on board the Jayhawk would allow the helicopter, the Hilo, to stay in that station for about 50 minutes.
50.
At that time, it was reported to Lieutenant Beta that the master of the vessel declined pumps to bail water off of the boat and survival kits, and he requested to be removed from the vessel due to flooding from an unknown source. Unfortunately, as a result of the intensity of the storm, the lieutenant was unable to hover over the boat to retrieve the crew members. And due to the wind and the movement of the boat, it was going to be impossible to lower the rescue basket onto the deck of the boat. Mm-hmm. You have to picture the boat is lunging violently in 25-foot waves in 40-knot winds. Yeah. And so in order to rescue them, the crew, they were going to have to jump into the water. The plan was to hook a long rope onto the end of the boat, and then the crew members were going to jump in. The rescue swimmer would, Mike Odom, would wait in the water at the end of the line near the basket, grab the swimmer, grab the basket, load the basket, then send the basket up to the helo, and then he would go back up, and they would reposition over the boat because the boat is moving in the water.
So can two people go up in the basket, or do they have to re-lower the basket every time to bring Mike up too?
I think they're re-lowering the basket. I don't think it's not big enough really to put two men into it.
Okay.
So it's going to be kind of timely to do all of these things.
Really timely. That seems like an involved process for sure in these conditions.
Right. And I had never really considered the fact that when these rescue swimmers are going out, that the boat is moving in the water the whole time. It's not like it's staying exactly in a fixed position, which makes sense. It's just something I'd never really considered before.
Right.
The Mirage crew were told that they wouldn't come out of the boat and get into the water immediately, that they would be beyond the range of helicopter rescue, probably based upon the amount of time they had to rescue these guys. And just before the five sailors began departing from the sailboat, the captain radioed that he would not leave the boat.
That is wild. So he just completely changed his mind, it sounds like. He did a 180.
Right. And I don't know if he had, maybe he changed his mind about the fact that the boat was sinking. Like, he thought the boat was sinking at one point, obviously, but maybe he reconsidered. I don't know what would inspire you at this point to not leave the boat.
Right. The boat did a 120 and the captain did a 180.
Yes, exactly. This unexpected turn of events was swiftly relayed to the Coast Guard search and rescue coordinator in Miami by the C-130. In response, the search and rescue coordinator delivered a decisive message saying, quote, "The Hilo will rescue all of them or none."
Oh, boy. So by making that decision, he was making the decision for the rest of the crew.
Right. And I don't know how much communication was really going on board. I'm sure that he understood the message. Unfortunately, I don't have any information to know what he was thinking in that moment, because this kind of creates a situation where you think he's being selfish and he doesn't care about his crew, right? Which I don't know if that's actually the case.
There could be so many factors going on.
Exactly. Assessing the conditions had stabilized since the passing storm, it was just considered that this was a greater risk to extract all of the men from the sea if they're not going to take everyone. And I don't know if this was just looking at weather patterns and, you know, the first weather front had sort of passed, but the weather is still not ideal for sailing. So Odom is waiting anxiously for Mirage crew's next move. They're really not sure what's going to happen. They're waiting for the go-ahead. He's positioned at the crew entrance door of the hovering helicopter. His legs and feet are adorned with the frog-like flippers dangling into the void below, with the Mirage bobbing in the waves, illuminated by the helicopter searchlight. The situation took on this appearance of a seemingly uneventful evening for the rescuers, because they were expecting they were going to turn around and head back home. Lieutenant Reed, who had been guiding Lieutenant Beta and the rescue crew to the site, let the captain know that no one would be able to be rescued. So that message was relayed from the dispatcher to the captain. Unfortunately, it appears that the crew members on board the Mirage were not made aware of this information, and they were preparing to jump overboard.
Breakdown in communication.
Right. They're out there on the deck. They have strung this line as they were instructed to do so, which is 50 feet long. It's trailing behind the boat. And you have to picture this like it's almost like a motorboat with a line dangling behind it. It's going through the water and there's nothing on the free end of it, but it's not just sitting there in the water because the sails are up. The captain of the boat never put the sails down, so it's still going at a pretty quick clip through the water, which is not going to make this easy for anyone.
So it's like a water ski line hanging off the back of the boat in motion.
Exactly. So again, Odom had planned to hold on to this line and grab each of the men as they went overboard. Lieutenant Beta started to move the helicopter a little bit away from the sailboat to wait for further instructions, and this is when we're kind of in this holding pattern. The members of the Jayhawk were watching the sailboat, and they spotted something unexpected. Cole had jumped into the ocean without anyone's command. Again, highlighting the lack of communication between everyone involved here. But I guess they don't have access to communicating directly with the helicopter. So I'm not really sure how they had decided they were going to indicate that it was time to go in. But now the decision's been made for the Coast Guard. They're obviously not going to turn around and leave because this guy's not going to make it. Cole is out there struggling to hold onto the line that's trailing behind the sailboat, and the boat is moving too fast. He wasn't able to grab onto this line. Odom, the rescue swimmer, was not in the water, and the rescue basket was not waiting for the jumper, which would have been a better scenario.
Much better.
Odom's still up there in the cabin door. Everyone is just in complete disbelief. Lieutenant Beta at that point moved the helicopter toward the boat so he could hover and keep Cole visible. So essentially what they did was they hooked Odom, the cable, to his harness. They lower him down into the water. Then they retrieve the cable. The cable goes back up. Then they hook the basket to the cable and lower it back down. Upon landing in the water, Cole was struck by how cold the temperature was. It was a startling 53 degrees, and the air temperature was around 40 degrees.
Oh, that's so cold.
Right? He's terrified. He's flailing around in the water amidst the dark. He's experiencing the sounds of the storm, the helicopter blades above, which are blowing air and spraying water all over the place, this bright spotlight. Finally, Cole feels Odom's touch, and he stated that it was a great feeling when that fellow put his arm around me.
I bet. Yeah. Hope.
Hope, right. It was a difficult experience for Odom. He came swimming hard for the basket, which was swinging ferociously below the helicopter. Lieutenant Beta, who's flying the helicopter, has no reference to be able to hold his position. And the moving of the water, the giant waves below, make it difficult for him to assess movement and whether or not he's even hovering in a stable position. And the winds are blowing 35 to 40 knots, which is thrashing the basket around from the area where Odom is attempting to grasp it. And it's not like the waves are stopping just because the basket's there. So the water is still, you know, I don't know. I can't even imagine how difficult that would be. Lieutenant Beta is relying on the guidance from Mark Buffetti, who's a Coast Guard flight mechanic and hoist operator. He's able to see Cole. So Mark is kneeling on the cabin floor with a waist restraint, and he's clipped into the helicopter. He's communicating with the pilot to get the basket to land in the correct position. So he's like, back 10 feet, right, back, hold, left, 5, hold, applying pressure to his control stick. And this is basically up and down movements with a push button, trying to match the height of the waves.
Oh, wow. Talk about like a terrifying video game.
Yes, exactly. Oh, my gosh. So much stress, so much pressure.
Yeah.
And I thought this was interesting. I never would have considered this before. But if there's extra slack in the line with the basket at the bottom, if that line goes around someone's body and then suddenly becomes tight again, then, you know, you have a demise of someone that's a rescuer or one of the people that you're trying to rescue.
Right. Yeah.
So it's kind of dangerous. You have to keep that line tight enough that you don't have extra length, but yet long enough that the rescuer can actually get a hold of the basket. And at this point, you know, it took multiple attempts for Odom to capture the basket. And by the time he was attempting to get Cole into it, Cole was becoming combative and he wouldn't sit down. He wasn't responding to instructions. And I think that he was in the throes of hypothermia.
Mm.
So he's in the basket and suddenly there's a giant jerk of the basket. And Cole was in the basket at that point. Odom was worried that Cole may have broken his neck because it was such a severe jerking motion. But thankfully, Cole was uninjured. Unfortunately, the whole debacle to get him into the basket took 20 minutes.
Oh, gosh, that's a long time.
Right. There's still four more. There's 5 of them total on the sailboat. One of them is the captain.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Who doesn't want to be rescued? So still three more people to rescue on board.
And only 50 minutes total, right? So only 30 minutes left.
30, yeah. Not enough time is really what it comes down to. Again, Odom was hoisted back up to the helicopter after this rescue so they could get closer to the sailboat. Because remember, the sailboat has its sails up and it's still moving. And it had already moved a mile.
Wow.
In 20 minutes. The next member of the Mirage was on deck getting ready to go. Seer was his name. It looked like for a moment he wasn't going to get off the boat. He later said that jumping off the boat into the black water was the most difficult thing to do. Like, I'm not really sure what would be more startling or terrifying than just standing on the edge of the boat being like, I'm going to purposefully jump into 25-foot waves in the dark.
Right. Yeah, that takes a lot of willpower to make that move.
That takes some big balls. I mean, if you knew for sure that the ship was going down, it would be a little bit easier, but
yeah.
Oh, that's a tricky decision. I'm going to try to remember that whenever I have to make a decision about like, what's for dinner? Be like, okay, I can do this.
I can do it.
Yeah.
Manageable.
Yes. Fortunately, Odom was in the water waiting and he gave him reassuring words. It took a lot of effort to get Seer into the rescue basket in the rough water. Also, he had a larger stature. He was 6'2". And once he was in the basket, he was hit by a wave and the whole basket was thrust underwater. He was jerking around. And the next thing he knew, he was flying in the air. He was swinging around. He even banged the bottom of the helicopter and the fuel tank before he was safely inside the aircraft.
What a wild ride.
Right? The crew recovered Odom after Seer was safely on the Jayhawk. But the wave that had swallowed Seer was terrifying to Odom because he had to swim to get out of the way of the aircraft. So I want you to imagine this. The aircraft is 25, 30 feet up in the air, maybe 30 feet, maybe a little bit more. I'm not sure exactly where they were hovering, but these waves are 25 to 30 feet tall. So you can imagine the water is almost hitting the bottom of the helicopter, which is what happened in this instance. And that's why Odom is so terrified, because he was worried that he might come in contact with it.
Oh, that's crazy.
So he advised at that point that they increase their clearance for the next hoist. And of course, everybody on the crew was in agreement for this, because I would imagine that that could probably take a helicopter out of the air.
Yeah, I'm sure they were just worried about getting trapped in a wave, a rogue wave.
That would be, oh my goodness, the worst possible thing. Mm-hmm. The rescue crew's backup swimmer was Mario Vitone, and he had noticed that Odom was looking exhausted, which was likely an understatement given what he had just been doing. He asked Mike if he was ready to sit this one out, and Mike said, hey, you know, I just want one more. I want to go out there one more time. At this time, two of the sailors have been retrieved. 40 minutes have elapsed, meaning they have 10 minutes left, which seems like maybe an error in judgment there. But
right.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I know how this feels because this is the way that I'm thinking a lot of the time. Like, okay, I'm just going to accelerate the amount of work I can do in a shorter period of time.
Or I've done this twice now. I'm getting better at it. So now this time I can do it in half the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure the adrenaline plays a role and you don't want to leave someone stranded. So I get it. In any case, the mathematics don't add up here for timing.
Right. Yeah.
The helicopter repositioned. They had to go back this time a half a mile and they hovered 100 feet above the water. Denman was the third man from the Mirage to be rescued. He jumped into the water. And as the helicopter lowered Odom down, he was swinging around and thrashing at the end of the cable. He ended up hitting the water with a lot of force. And the water made its way into his nose and throat. He was gasping for air, coughing. He was vomiting. He was able to finally gather himself and he made his way towards Denman. the hoist operator, Buffetti, had to work to ensure no loops were created in the cable again. Now, remember, he's even higher up. So this is going to create more, I guess it's, I don't know that it's more complicated than before, but it's just a little bit of a different approach than he had in the past. Trying to keep that basket in reach for Odom, but not enough line that it's going to get tangled. Finally, Demon was hoisted into the basket. And Vitone, remember, he's the backup swimmer, helped the hoist operator, Buffetti, in the efforts to raise the basket. They were trying to keep it from banging the helicopter. The basket climbed up. It was swinging in wide circles. Then it slammed forcefully into the fuel tank, and it swung between the fuselage and the tank, and it slid along the edge of the cabin door, and it hit the side of the tank. And then it swung around again in this huge arcing motion. Then the strands of the cable began popping.
Oh, gosh. And this, the person they're rescuing, Denman, is still in the basket?
Yes. Vitone yelled to Buffetti because he could feel the wires peeling from the cable. Denman was suspended, like you said. He's dangling in the swinging basket 60 to 70 feet above the seas, just waiting to determine what his fate is. He may not have been aware of the fact that the cable was breaking. I'm not sure, but I'm sure that he was aware of the fact that he was swinging all around, and that would be terrifying in and of itself.
Yeah, slamming into the fuel tank and the fuselage. Yeah.
Yeah. So Buffetti, he understands the urgency of the situation. He began pulling the hoist full tilt until the frayed cable was completely recovered, preventing Demon from falling to his death. To make matters more stressful, Lieutenant Junior Guy Pierce made an announcement to the crew that they were only 6 minutes until their time to turn around, which they say X number of minutes till bingo. So this was 6 minutes till bingo. Now they're not able to pick up Odom because the cable was broken and the cable straps were jammed in the hoist mechanism. But also they ran out of time. So they were thinking about different ways that they could be creative to get him out of the water. But there really were no solutions that were ideal because they were already over time. And at this point, they're risking all of their lives. Now, Odom is still in the water and he's unable to be recovered, but he has no understanding of what just happened. So he's waiting for them and they're not coming for him. The crew tried to communicate with him by flashlight and calling him on the radio, but Odom didn't respond. And the pilot flashed his hover lights, indicating that they were no longer able to see him. But I think it was just the only way they could communicate with him at that point. Odom fired a flare because he thought the crew couldn't see him. And again, he didn't know what was going on. And then Odom observes the rescue basket descend into the sea, like it broke off and fell into the water.
Oh, terrifying. Yeah. His ticket to home just sunk in the ocean.
Right. And the Jayhawk was hovering about 200 yards away, but they deployed a marker buoy intended with, so this marker buoy can track nearby objects through a radio transmission. My guess is that they put it there so they could find him later. And Odom said, "I glanced at it and something felt off." Fear seized him as uncertainty clouded his mind. And with a heavy heart, he whispered in disbelief, "Oh no."
It was all coming together. What was happening?
The gravity of the situation, if you will. As the Jayhawk repositioned itself above him, the faces of the crew were obscured by the glaring overhead lights, despite being only 25 feet away. And now they're 7 minutes past their designated bingo time, and they had no choice but to prioritize their own survival, leaving Odom behind. Vitone was Odom's closest friend among the crew. He deployed a life raft and sealed the cabin. Odom inflated his life raft and climbed aboard, resigned to his fate. And so as the darkness of the storm, Michael Odom found himself alone, adrift amid the relentless fury of the ocean. With the rescue efforts thwarted by the unforgiving elements and the limitations of time, Odom faced the grim reality of his situation. Yet in the face of despair, he clung to hope, summoning the strength to board the life raft and brace himself for the unknown that lay ahead. As we conclude this chapter of Michael Odom's harrowing saga, we invite you to join us for the next installment of this incredible journey in part two of this gripping tale. We'll delve deeper into Odom's fight for survival amongst the treacherous waters and the unwavering determination that propelled him through the darkest of hours. Tune in to our next episode to witness the continuation of Michael Odom's extraordinary odyssey. So that's where I'm going to leave you, cliffhanger.
hanging, but at least you're not leaving us hanging from a Coast Guard rescue basket in the middle of the night over the Atlantic Ocean in a storm.
Right. This is a way more comfortable way to be waiting on a cliff. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Crux Podcast. We hope that you found Michael Odom's incredible journey as captivating as we did. Remember, your feedback and stories are invaluable to us. If you have any suggestions or if you want to share your own survival story, you can reach us via email at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com or connect with us on Instagram at thecruxpodcast. We truly value your input and love hearing from our listeners. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, we kindly ask you to take a moment to leave us a rating and review if you've not done so yet. Your support helps us continue bringing you compelling content. Thanks again for being a part of our community. Until next time, stay safe, keep having fun and adventuring.
Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Julie.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.